Recordings are rolling, Mike, at your discretion. KY6V.
Standing by for the preamble. CDQ.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to the Outreach Program, sponsored by the South Coast Amateur Radio Service. This program has been established to help those wishing to learn more about our hobby and further assist those wishing to obtain licensed status. The first in our series will be an in-depth course pertaining to what one should know when studying for a technician class license. This course will be conducted with two sessions weekly, which will be at 7 p.m. 2300 Zulu each Tuesday and at 7 p.m. 2300 Zulu each Sunday evening. For those that are licensed, already licensed, and wish either a refresher course, would just like to listen, please connect to our SCARA server at either Echolink node number 96140 or IRLP node 9614. For those who are interested in obtaining your license for the first time, please contact Mike K80CDQ via email at vyp@vypanet.southcars.com to enroll in the class and be given directions as to the study material required and the manner you will be connecting into the course. Let me pause for a moment.
Oh, yeah.
I can't help you.
But I can't listen. You listen to it.
The material being presented is formulated from data obtained from the ARRRL and is simply being forwarded in a presentation format by SCARS. Should anyone take issue to some of the technical statements made, and in keeping with not interrupting the class and session, please convey your comments or suggestion to the outreach program at vyp@vypnet.southcars.com. Before we start this evening's program, it should be mentioned that the material being covered is based on the new Q&A pool effective July 1st, 2014. This means that this material should not be used for those that are planning on taking the test prior to the date shown. It should be further mentioned that this course covers only the requirements pertaining to the United States Part 97 rules and does not include other requirements that may be found in foreign countries. Should any other country other than the United States wish to have their own licensing sessions on this server, please drop us an email at vyp@vypnet.southcars.com. Now, do we have any emergency or out of the ordinary business that needs to be handled before we start this evening's program? Well, hearing and no emergency or ordinary business, I do see someone is keying up out of your system, Gary, and maybe the audio is not muted. But when we begin the program, maybe Mike or Craig can turn it over to you and see if you have any questions. My name is Kathy. My call sign is Kilo 6 Sierra United November, and I'm merely your opening moderator for this evening. Here in Port St. Lucie this evening, it's about 81 degrees, and we did have a high of about 87 today, but it's a very beautiful evening. And I understand that Craig, WE2Q, will begin this evening's program, but our two instructors are WE2Q, Craig, it's been a long time, and Mike, KD0CDQ, who usually is our moderator. They are our instructors this evening. And I want to welcome them along with our classmates and all those connected. So I'm going to throw it to you, Craig, for your first question. And then you and Mike can be bought back and forth. And, of course, throw it out there to others to ask questions or comments. So with that, WE2Q, it's been a long time. Come aboard.
Well, thank you, Kathy. I appreciate the introduction. It's good to hear your voice as well. And yes, I haven't been on very much, but it's nice to be on for a little bit. And I have the pleasure of doing the first question tonight. It's from sub-element T6, electrical components of part 97, of the question pool, actually. The first question is T6A04. What electrical component stores energy in an electric field? There are four answers there. The correct answer is capacitor. It really, there isn't too much that can say to help you remember the components themselves, other than becoming familiar with what they do and talking about them and using them. And a capacitor, as the word may indicate, has the capacity to store charge. And actually the definition is a capacitor is an electrical component that stores energy in the form of an electric field. And it's electrostatic energy, just like you would get off of rubbing a balloon against a wall and getting a static discharge. The capacitor itself is a passive component. It sits there and is charged by electricity flowing to it. Interesting thing about capacitors, you might be able to look this up if you wanted to in Wikipedia or other locations. The very first capacitors in use were Leyden jars developed in Germany. And in order to increase their power and or to increase the length of time that they discharged, a number of these capacitors were hooked together. And Benjamin Franklin in Philadelphia termed this as a battery, looking at a battery of cannons set up in the same way. He called these Leyden jars a battery. Don't confuse those with a battery. These are really temporary storage devices that have to be charged. A battery can store electricity for longer periods of time and can actually chemically generate electricity, as was developed by Voltaire later on. And I'm going to take a break here for a second. So again, a capacitor stores an electrostatic field. Just as an interesting fact, the unit of measure for the charge that is stored by a capacitor is a farad. A farad is an extremely large unit, however, that's 1 ampere per second, a very large amount of electricity. And for most uses, we use millifarads, microfarads, nanofarads, and picofarads. That's 10 to the minus 3 to 10 to the minus 12 units of charge in a capacitor. Any questions at all on a capacitor? I'll read the question one more time. What electrical component stores energy in an electric field? That's a capacitor. Any questions? All right, Mike, hearing nothing, I'll turn it over to you.
Very good, Craig. I guess in those jelly jars, they had to drink all of that juice out of there before they could use them. That was a good use of those empty containers. I'm going to remind everybody, now that you're on the air, I would suggest that if you have your common schematic symbols used in circuit diagrams copied, I would get it out now, the common schematic form, because that will come into play tonight. And also, if you have them handy, I would get out your figures. Remember, there's going to be probably 2 pages of figures when you take the test. I'm going to be working on figure T2. Craig may be working on one also, but you will need figure T2 as we go along a little bit later. This is KD0CDQ, and I will tell you the section we're in, and then I'll give the question. The section that we are in is this Tango 6 Alpha. It's electrical components. And now, Craig mentioned farads. Now, that's something you can scratch down on your pad, F-A-R-A-D. So when you look at your vocabulary list that they have recently put on the South Cause website, you can look up farad. That'd be a good thing to look up, F-A-R-A-D. But this section covers fixed and variable resistors, capacitors and inductors, fuses, switches, and batteries, as Craig already mentioned. Okay, I'm going to let it drop, and then I'm going to come aboard with Tango 6 Alpha 06. This question reads, what type of electrical component stores energy in a magnetic field? What type of electrical component stores energy in a magnetic field? They give us resistor, capacitor, inductor, and diode. The proper one is inductor. Now you notice I didn't go A, B, C, D. I'm trying to get us off of that, but inductor is the answer. An inductor stores magnetic energy. The property of storing magnetic energy is called inductance. See, they changed the word a little bit, inductance. So an inductor is a property of storing magnetic energy. It's called inductance. So as inductors store and release energy in a circuit, an inductor smooths out the current changes. Now what does this dog look like? What does an inductor look like? Inductors are made from wire wound around a coil, like the pencil in your hand is wrapping a wire around it, say. So inductors are made from wire wound around a coil, wound in a coil, sometimes around a core of magnetic material, like magnetic material might be a piece of iron. That's a good thing. It could be wrapped around a core of magnetic material that concentrates the magnetic energy. So when you get the question, what type of electrical component stores energy in a magnetic field? It's an inductor. And you remember, it looks like a coil. It's got a magnetic material inside of it, and it's wire wrapped around the outside. I think you all can picture that. Okay, are there any questions with this question or any comments? Please go now.
Here. I'm sorry for all the misconfusion. I'm having technical difficulties because I'm doing it on my iPad, which is a very old iPad. Sorry.
And six, Victor.
Okay, first lineman, that's very fine. No problem. The more technology you mess with, the more you'll be comfortable with. Because in your lifetime, you're going to see stuff that we can't even dream of today. Because what we're using today, we never dreamt of before. Okay, go ahead, Gordon.
Thanks, Mike. And Lyman, I'm sorry you're having problems, but I'm sure that you're the dude that will get them straightened out. So stick with it. I just wanted to mention, Mike, it's very interesting here for our students to realize the difference between the capacitance question Greg and the inductive question of yours. And what is necessary to remember here is that you're looking at an electrical field when you're talking about capacitance, and you're looking at a magnetic field when you're talking about inductance. And that's something to probably remember. Thanks, Mike. KY6V, over.
Okay, have we any other comments? Please go now. I heard somebody tiptoeing through the tulips, but I never heard anything else. Does anyone else have a comment? Go now. Okay, I'm going to send it back to Craig. Craig has the next question. Take it away. Over.
Thanks, Mike. And as it turns out, my question is closely related to Mike's. That's T6A07. The question is, what electrical component is usually composed of a coil of wire? The answer here is inductor. You may first have thought of a transformer, commonly using a coil of wire, actually using two, one as a primary and a secondary. But the answer here is an inductor, and it's a coil of wire that induces a flow of electricity and a magnetic field. There are lots of kinds of inductors that we could talk about, and one of the ways of identifying it on a schematic drawing is a loop or coil of wire. And if you look on your diagrams, you'll find the inductor as a coil and a transformer as two coils facing each other. Mike pretty much covered the rest of the inductor, but there are several kinds, ferrites that can be wound and used to filter and to block signals, and a number of field type of devices made from coils of wires called inductors. One more time, the question is, what is an electrical component that usually composed of a coil of wire? And the answer here is inductor. Any questions on that? All right, Mike, back to you.
Okay, Greg, this is KD0CDQ. The one I've selected is Tango 6 Alpha 09. And 09 reads this way. What electrical component is used to protect other circuit components from circuit overloads? Now, most everyone has seen one of these, but what electrical component is used to protect other circuit components from current overloads? They give us fuse, capacitor, inductor, or all of these answers are correct. Oh, that's a flood of answers. The proper answer is a fuse. Now, a fuse, they have different forms, but fusers interrupt excessive current flow by melting a short length of metal. If you can picture a little canister, it's got glass usually or plastic today it may be, it's got metal ends and it's in a circuit, like clipped into a circuit. And it's a little piece of wire inside. And when too much current, see, when the metal melts or blows, we call the word blows, when the metal breaks, the current path is broken. That makes sense. It's a piece of wire, it gets overheated, and it just breaks. Sometimes you can't even look. You can look at the thing and you can't even see that it's broken, but it is. Fuses are rated by the maximum current that can be carried without blowing. Fuses cannot be reused. Okay, that's one thing that we're not going to go back in there and string a piece of wire in it. Just get another fuse. So it's always good when you have any kind of a unit that uses fuses, have one or two handy. You know, go to the store and pick up a couple and keep them right with the rig, because there's nothing more embarrassing than blowing a fuse, and I don't have one. So have it handy so you can be like a pro. Now, there are slow blow fuses, just like the word slow blow says. These fuses can withstand temporary overloads, but will blow if the overload is sustained. So slow blow, some of those will take a little bit of a kick, and they won't break. They give you a little leeway there. I suspect I have one in one of my 2-meter radios, because one day I had a lot of transmission and the radio was getting awful hot, and I noticed the light started flashing on and off on the radio like it wanted to go to sleep. Scared me, but it must have been a slow blow fuse, because it held in there. It held in and didn't go out. So a fuse is a good little tool. You see them in all different shapes. Now, we don't use circuit breakers. These are just fuses. A little piece of wire and a little glass or plastic case, usually glass, with metal ends on it. Anybody else have a question? Anyone have a question about fuses or about this part of the circuit? Please go now. Okay, except for a little mouse that I might have heard in the background. We're going to go back over to Craig, and Craig has his question. Please go now.
Thanks, Mike. Whiskey Echo 2 Quebec. My next question is T6B02. Again, you should refer to your component diagrams to become familiar with what they look like when talking about all of these questions in this section. What electric component allows current to flow in only one direction? Again, what electric component allows current to flow in only one direction? The answer here is a diode. A diode is an electronic component defined as having asymmetric conductance. That means it conducts only in one direction. It has a very high resistance to current in one direction, and ideally a very low resistance in the other direction. Diodes were the first semiconductors that were used, and with the exception of a vacuum tubes, which sufficed as diodes prior to the semiconductor age. They predated the transistor, and became the de facto standard for rectification. And another name for a diode is a rectifier. Early name was a rectifier. There are many kinds of diodes. We'll talk about another one a little later on in the questions. There's a standard asymmetric diode used for rectification, light emitting diodes, photodiodes, Schottky diodes, tunnel and varicap diodes, and Zinnier diodes. And in your use of radio and your course of study, you'll find that they're used for specific cases and specific uses. Again, the question is, what electric component allows current to flow in only one direction? And that's a diode. And before I turn it over for questions, I have one more comment. Diodes are used for, I've mentioned rectification several times. That means that it only flows in one direction. If you put four diodes together in a certain configuration, you can change alternating current into DC current through a process called rectification. When the wave of electricity is flowing in one direction, it will be passed through a certain set of diodes. And when it wants to flow in the other direction, it will be passed through the other two diodes. resulting in direct current coming out of that diode bridge. I don't know if there's a picture of it in the chart. I should have checked before this, but it's called a full wave bridge rectifier. You might want to look that up, and again, it'll show the diode, and it's another way of remembering what a diode is. Any questions on diodes? Okay, Mike, back to you.
Very good. And the question I'm going to cover is Tango 6 Bravo 04. So 04 reads, which of the following components can be made of three layers of semiconductor material? Which of the following components can be made of three layers of semiconductor material? They give you an alternator. We talked about those the other day in automobiles. Transistor, a triode, or a pentagrid converter. Now, I'm not sure what that is, but I'm sure Gordon does. Okay, on this one, what can be made of three layers of semiconductor material? It would be a transistor. Now, transistors are semiconductor materials. Now, they're doped in patterns. They're actually isolated inside this little tube. It's a tube, and you can see them on the internet. If you look up, just put the word transistor, and you'll see all kind of transistors with little different rings of colors on them to show it's like a little barrel. It's got wires coming out of both ends, usually. And the semiconductor material is doped. It's actually treated in pattern designs so that small voltages or currents applied to the proper point in the pattern controls large voltage and current. With the appropriate external current and a source of power, transistors can amplify or switch voltages and currents. Now, as I recall, when they were first discovered by a couple of good engineers, I think it was a Western Electric they worked for, or I'm trying to remember. When they first developed the transistor, they won awards for designing them, but there wasn't really a use at the time because it was in the earlier times. And I would think it was back in the 20s or 30s back there. They discovered these transistors, and they weren't sure what to do with them, but they sure knew they were an effective tool that would be used in the future in electronics. So a transistor, you've all seen transistors. They're just a little, looks like a paper or plasticky-looking tube with stripes on them, and the stripes designate what their capacity is. You don't have to memorize those pattern codes, but probably technicians that worked with transistors knew those pattern codes by just looking at it. But there's always charts that tell you what a capacitor's capacity is, what it can do. And you'll see those in electronic stores, and they'll have them in little bins, and you just purchase what you need. If you're going to do any circuit building, you're going to be using transistors. Are there any comments? Please go now. Okay, I'm not hearing any comments, so I'm going to give it on back to Craig. This is KD0CVQ, going to WE2Q. Take it away.
Whiskey Echo 2, Quebec. Well, again, Mike has introduced my next question. That's T6B05. Which of the following electronic components can amplify signals? There are very few components that can actually amplify a signal, and here the answer is a transistor, which Mike talked about quite a bit. Semiconductor materials layered together with doping of other materials to control the action of the transistor. And by the way, I wanted to mention a thing you might have already heard of called LSCs or LSIs, large-scale integrated circuits. They're pretty common in most more complicated electrical devices today, and they are just made up of many, many, many transistors, capacitors, etc., in the one chip. Very interesting way of doping and controlling and getting a lot of components into one device. Again, the question here is which of the following electronic components can amplify signals? And notice here it says signals, not power, but signals itself. The answer here is a transistor. Any questions? Michael, back to you.
Very good. You notice these questions are very applicable because if you're going to be working in amateur radio, if you're going to do any building or anything of that kind, you're going to have to know these components, know what they are just by looking at them and handling them. So the question I'm handling is T6 Bravo 06. Oh, Bell Labs. Okay, Bell Labs of transistors. Yeah, I was trying to remember which lab that was. I lost that. Question is, how is the cathode lead of a semiconductor diode usually identified? How do you identify a cathode lead of a semiconductor diode usually identified? With the word cathode, with a stripe, with the letter C. Well, all of these choices are correct. Now tonight, all of these choices are correct. I'm not doing it. I'm not going to do it for you tonight. A cathode lead, I kind of mentioned it in the last question. The cathode lead of a semiconductor diode is usually identified with a stripe. Okay, think of a stripe on a little tube. And so many electrical components use paint markings called a color code, and there is a code. When I worked for the telephone company, I knew that code in and out for wires. All wires in a bundle have a color code. And you just look at the bundle of wires and you could tickle your way through there and you could find the proper wire to connect together. When you work with something, you'll get to know it. When you get away from it, it gets away from us. So the color code is used to identify their value. The type of semiconductor is made of silicone that has been engineered to conduct in a special way. A component that only allows current to flow in one direction. Craig had this one. So a component that allows current to flow in only one direction is called a diode. Diode. It goes in one direction only. But there's all different kinds of these semiconductor diodes. And again, you look in your vocabulary of words and you get these definitions are right in there. But a good thing to do is on the computer, just enter, say, semiconductor diode or any one of these single words and look in where it says, over on the left, I'm forgetting what it calls, like pictures. You want to see the images. You want to see the images. And you'll see all kinds of pictures of different kind of diodes show up, and it'll give you the flavor of what you're looking at. Okay, anybody have any questions on that one? Please go now. Okay, at this point, Craig has two questions in a row. He's got a doubleheader here. He's going to roll two dice. Take it away, Craig.
Thank you, Mike. Whiskey Echo to Quebec. First question is T6B07. What does the abbreviation LED stand for? You're probably all familiar with this. This is a light-emitting diode. They have three other answers here, all that would be abbreviated LED, but just remember, it's a light-emitting diode. And this is a true diode, just like any other diode. It conducts in one direction. However, as a certain amount of electricity flows through that diode, photons are released in a process called electroluminescence. The color of the light depends upon what the doping or what the material is of the LED and the value of the electricity flowing through it. LEDs are often very, very small, and for that reason they have an epoxy lens case over the top of them that actually spreads out the light so it's more visible. LEDs are commonly used in as indicators, lights on a panel of a radio, and now used commonly on monitors of all kinds. This device, just like what Mike was talking about, has an anode and a cathode, the plus side and the negative side. And it passes through these two things through a very small wire into the diode. The diode reflects and flashes through the lens, spreading light out as that diode is energized. Again, the question is, what does the abbreviation LED stand for? And that's a light-emitting diode. And you'll recognize the diode on a schematic or in your chart as a standard diode diagram, but with two arrows pointing up. And just for a little fun, you should try to find out what the diode is that has the two arrows pointing into the diode. It's a different kind of diode. Any questions on LEDs?
Comment, Greg. Six Victor.
Yes, sir, Gordon.
I just wanted to put a little humor into this. You know, for a person like myself that's got multiple computers running 24/7, I've got LEDs shining all over the house. You go to bed at night, Greg, and you walk back into the radio room, it looks like Grand Central Station. I have a LED that says the power's on my speakers for the main computer. I have LEDs on the laptop that says, hey, but the power is on. An LED that says the hard drive is active. And it goes on and on and on. How do you turn all of these things off at night when you go to sleep, Greg, except for just turning everything off? Over.
That's a good question, Gordon. Unfortunately, there isn't any way that I know of. I wish manufacturers would have an option on these devices so that you could put the indicators off or in sleep or standby mode. They do burn real electricity, and it does add up after a while. Like the transformers that charge your telephones and charge a number of things, they should be unplugged to conserve electricity, because those inductors, those transformers, are creating a magnetic field and burning electricity all the time, as are these LEDs that are flashing through the night. Unfortunately, I don't know of any way of dimming them or putting them out.
Well, I'll tell you what, I've come up, Greg, I probably shouldn't say this, but I've come up with a means where I've got some coasters, you know, for glasses and that kind of stuff. And I stick one in front of one LED, and I stick one in front of another LED, and I go to sleep, and there's no blue light, sir. Over.
That's a good method, as long as they're not the larger scale LEDs or some of the old ones that got hot. You wouldn't want to start a fire. And I don't know if you've seen it, but there is was a commercial some time back about all the LEDs glowing from all the VCRs and clocks that we couldn't reset throughout the United States. And the entire United States from space had this little amber or green glow to it. But I'll remember the coaster trick, Gordon, and maybe we'll try that. That'll bring us down to the next question. Oh, let me just check and make sure there's no other questions. All right, nothing heard. My next question is T6C13. Which of the following is accurately represented in an electrical circuit schematic diagrams? The answer here is the way components are interconnected. From a circuit diagram, you can gain an awful lot of information. The schematics are full of information on how the circuit works. You can do a number of calculations and intuitive deductions on how things work. It will really tell you how that system is laid out and how it works. It does not show you how on a circuit board these components are actually placed, where in the radio they might be. It only tells how they're connected. So sometimes the schematic diagram is not in any does not in any way represent the actual placement of components on a circuit board or within the radio itself. Very important thing to learn how to read and how to recognize components, and an awful lot of information on those charts usually. Again, the question is which of the following is accurately represented in electrical circuit schematic diagrams. The answer here is the way components are interconnected, only the way they're wired and connect to each other. Any questions on that? That's an important concept. A very quiet audience this evening. Mike, I'll turn it back to you, and I guess you'll have it to wrap up with. Whiskey Echo to Quebec.
Well, actually, I let myself get skipped over. We're going back to T6-Charlie-01. T6-Charlie-01. Now's the time to get that common schematic out that I mentioned that's on the South Cars downloads. That schematic sheet is a beauty. It is on the internet, too. I've seen that quite a bit. and it shows so many different symbols that are used in electrical diagrams that one sheet is a real fine tool to have handy, because you don't ever know. You might be looking at a diagram for whatever reason and you don't know what something is. Well, try to find it on this chart. This chart has most of them, not every one I've noticed, but quite a few. So you guys brought up some thoughts there about the lights glowing in the night. Reminds me of Star Trek when you went into up on the bridge and all those flashing lights. Grief, they had enough of a power going there that would keep them awake all night. There wouldn't be anybody sleeping on that watch on the bridge of the Star Trek. But Gordon asked the question, how would you cover up these lights? And you reminded me of another movie, The Thing. Remember The Thing, that old black and white movie where a monster was frozen in the ice? And the fellow that was put on guard to watch this monster in the ice, he thought the thing was staring at him. So he took a blanket and threw a blanket over the ice so that he wouldn't have to look at the creature. Except he forgot that the blanket was an electric blanket. So I guess what we could do in our rooms with all the flashing lights, we could throw a blanket over it, as long as it's not an electric blanket. Yeah, I have the same thing. I have all these power strips, and all these power strips at night are glowing. You know, they're flashing around along me. Now, I had a nurse that told me, she was a retired nurse, that you should never sleep in a room with green lights. And I looked at her. I said, what's the matter with green lights? She says, just don't do it. Now, she was a typical nurse. She didn't explain why not to do something. She says, just don't sleep in a room with green lights. And I've got, in the bedroom, there's electric toothbrush that glows green, and my radio glows green, but I haven't found any problems with it. I don't know what she was talking about, so I'm just doing this to stall, giving you a chance to get out your common schematics, and maybe you'll even get out your figure T2. Okay, here's the question. T6, Charlie 01, letting it drop, and I'll give you the question. Okay, the question reads, what is the name for standardized representations of components in an electrical wiring diagram? What's the name of standardized representations of components in an electrical wiring diagram? Are they called electrical depictions? Gray sketches? Different shades of gray. Schematic symbols? Or component callouts? Now, the answer is schematic symbols. Schematic symbols are used when drawing a circuit because there are so many types of components, radio and electronic designers use them as a convenient way of describing a circuit. Now, people that get into architecture, they too have their own schematic of identifying what they're doing, and people in plumbing have their own designs, and people in electronics, and that's what these common symbols are. This is electronics, these symbols. And when I go on a little bit further here, I'm going to ask you to look at your chart if you have it handy and see if you can spot some of these. Now, Craig was mentioning some of those diodes, like the LED, all of those under the diode section, you'll see the diode symbols so you can tell which kind of diode is in that circuit. Are there any questions on this one about schematic symbols? Letting it drop. Somebody's trying to tiptoe in there. I'm seeing the bar light up. It's the TX bar, but I'm not hearing anything. Please give it a try again.
Yeah, KC2RMO here. Just a couple of real quick things. I think we've got Lyman wanted to ask a question, a couple of questions back. So I just wanted to let you know about that. And we talk about memories of The Thing. What a great movie it was. It was James Arness's first movie before we saw him on Gunsmoke. So that's a little tidbit for you. And yeah, and I can remember a couple of nights back in 1968 where I saw lots of blinking lights, but that's another story. Back to you.
Yes, with James Arness, I wondered where they found a block of ice big enough to put him in, because he's a big dude, you know. And they had him in that ice, but that guy really, it was his first movie, I understand. So I guess he went through that torture so he could become the Gunsmoke man, huh? And Lyman has some questions. Lyman, if you want to come aboard, I was getting pinged like I was in a submarine. I didn't know who was pinging me, but I didn't see anything in the text. You want to try it again, Lyman? Go ahead, please.
Oh, I'm sorry. Well, a couple, before your question, there was an, I can't remember his name, but he said two questions. What was the last question he said? Like, which number was it? Like, T6 something something.
Japan, late one?
I think, oh, it got pushed ahead. I think it was T6 Charlie 13. Is that the one you're referring to? T6 Charlie 13? Over.
Yes, that is. Thank you a lot. Over.
You notice I'm using it over. I'm trying to use some language that makes it simpler. Sometimes you're working an event or you're on the radio or even on a net and you want to let everyone know that you're finished. You could say over. Some people say back to you. Whatever kind of terminology. And if you get somebody that's been in the Army, they have their own way of going back to you. It'll come to me what they say. But everybody's got their way. Now, because I went out of sequence there, I'm going to take the next question. But let me let it drop, and then we'll go on to it.
Juliet Lima.
Go ahead, Juliet Lima. Go ahead while I'm punching some things in on my keypad. Go ahead.
Okay. Thank you, and for you, JL, and the group. And Lyman needs to look for Tango 6, Charlie 12. I was looking at it when he was originally asking the question, and I had tried to come in a couple times without my mic plugged in. Maybe this time it worked. Thank you, and for you, JL, out.
Yeah, that'll happen. Sometimes if you shout loud enough, the other radio operator might hear us without using the radio, but that's another story. Okay, we're going on to T6 Delta 03. Now, this is one of the diagram questions. Now, years ago, they did not have these diagram questions. Quite recently, they started them either again or they put them in. They only came on a few years ago, but it's good because the diagrams are on the general and they're on the extra, and it's a good thing that they put them on the tech. I don't know why they weren't there, but they're there now. So they will give you a couple of sheets that have these diagrams, probably be two sheets with three diagrams on them, and you'll get a question or two or three on it. And if you're a visual person, it's grand because you're looking at the picture. It's right there. They ask you, what are you looking at? Well, if you're a visual person, you'll pick it up. But so if you're looking at figure T2, Tango 2, you want to look at, that's the one I'm going to be doing right now. So the question reads, what type of switch is represented by component 3 in figure T2. So you look at your diagram, T2, and you look for the number 3 on that diagram, and they'll normally, on diagrams, they'll go from left to right. Power goes from left to right on a diagram. That's maybe a good help to you to understand. It goes from left to right on a diagram. You wonder, where does this thing start? So looking from left to right, number 3 is right there. So they're asking you, what is that figure that's showing there? The little curly Q, what is that? They're giving you, now this is kind of confusing word-wise, so bear with me while I try to read these. A single pole, single throw. A single pole, double throw. A double pole, single throw. My gosh. A double pull, double throw, all this stuff. You're looking at all those words, right? If you look at the diagram, it's one connector between two points. That's a single pull, single throw. And if you look at your common schematics, second row, center left, it says switches. The word is switches, not witches, but switches. And under switches, they kind of abbreviate. They have SPST, which is single pole, single throw. They have SPDT, single pole, double throw. They had to abbreviate because they couldn't fit all of that. If you look at that diagram, many of the different kind of circuit switches will be in that one little box right there. So if a circuit contains more than two or three components, trying to describe it clearly in words becomes very difficult. To describe complicated circuits, engineers have developed a schematic diagram.
Hello?
Yes, I had to let it drop because I was going over a little heavy. We're okay there, Lyman. Native Americans use like smoke signals. That's the story they tell us. You know, they wet a blanket and put it over a fire and made smoke signals. So people have always been doing signals. People drawing pictures in the sand. You look at things about ancient Egypt and all of that. You've seen things drawn in the sand. And you've even seen the Romans and the Greeks. They used a chisel and a piece of slate, and they marked things. So circuits didn't start with electricians. It didn't start with EEs, electrical engineers. There's always been symbols, and there's always been some kind of a diagram. That's the thing with human beings. We're pretty well, when we can't use words, which you can't speak to everyone, you can always use a diagram. And these schematic diagrams, excuse me, of complex circuits using symbols representing each of the components. Now, lines and dots show circuit connections, you know, like where electricity is flowing or the water is flowing in a water system. But they may not correspond to the actual wires. That's what can get tricky if you're looking at a circuit board. If the diagram is not exactly right, you may look at a line that shows the current is flowing through a certain line, but it may not be the actual wire that you're looking at, the actual circuit. So you've got to be mindful of what you're doing. Are there any questions about any kind of components like you see in that diagram? We could spend the time or go over that whole diagram, what each piece is, but that's something you can do with homework. And that's something which is important to do, especially now, or the general, or the extra exam, is to look at the diagrams that you know you're going to have this diagram. They're not going to throw a diagram from left field. You're going to know what the diagram is. So look at the whole diagram and go through it with your schematic sheet and see if you can identify everything. See if the symbols are drawn in a way that you can understand. Sometimes you look at a symbol and you say, wait, I can't make that one out. And you look at the cheat sheet and you say, oh, okay, that's what it is, and it comes to you. It takes a little while for some of these to sink in. Are there any questions about these circuit diagrams? Over.
Six, Victor.
Go right ahead, Gordon.
Yeah, thanks, Mike. I think Lyman was trying to get in. Try to pick him up, please. Over.
Yeah, Lyman, come trickling in there. What do you got to say? Go ahead, please.
My iPad is doing something really weird, and it keeps going on and off, and I'm really sorry for the technical difficulties and all the on and off I've been having. Seriously, I'm very sorry.
That's quite okay. Gordon will tell you when he was with CBS, sometimes they had trouble too. I was listening to a radio station today, kept it going up and down, up and down. The commercials were really loud and strong, but they were connecting with a program out of New York, and for some reason they must have had a bad line, because whenever they would go to the conversation that was going on, it was weak. I had to turn up my radio, and sometimes it faded. The sound was fading away, and it'd come back up. Something was wrong in the circuit. But I guess the dude working this weekend wasn't listening because he wasn't working his board to do anything about it. But the commercials were surely strong, and using earbuds, when the commercials came on, it woke me up. I knew, okay, I've got the right station on there. That's okay, Lyman. That's okay. And we will have technical difficulties. And never have to be ashamed or anything when you have technical difficulties, because you will. People will. And you got to give them a break. If somebody is all of a sudden something's awry with their radio and then they come back, you know, you can make a little joke with them or something, but don't dig it deep, because some people take it personally when something doesn't go right. So you got to be walk softly. But when you do something that's kind of jacked up, just laugh it off and just let it go. Don't let it bother you, because it'll happen. It happens to all of us. Anybody else have a comment? Please go now. We finished the last question, by the way. Over.
Comment.
Six Victor for one comment.
I'll let you make a comment, but I think Lyman's making some socks. He's darning something. Go ahead, Gordon.
You rascal. Now, we're not talking about feed out of CBS. When CBS went down, we called it going black. The screen went absolutely black. And boy, did things start to happen. Mike, KY6V, over.
Yeah, one of the guys in the club, he works for public radio. And I've asked him, how come there's so many I call them dead spots, you know, no sound. And he says that the systems are computerized, and when something goes awry, you have to wait so many seconds, and it comes back on its own. They don't have anything they can do. They have to wait for the cycle of the computer. You think that's so now, Gordon? Over.
Well, it depends on the feed, Mike. You know, there's a lot of avenues to that one. If it's a radio feed, AM, FM, if it's television, in television, the key is when your screen goes black, that means it's lost the studio feed. When your screen goes with a bunch of sparklies on it, it means that the transmitting device has failed. And I'll tell you a cute little story. You know, my whole family was brought up with CBS, and I said, I want you to let me know the moment that you see sparklies on your screen. Over.
I don't know about the sparklies, but I'm still using an antenna in my attic, and when it's stormy or when the wind is really strong, I actually see the adjacent stations come on, which was strange the first time I saw that. They slide to the left or they slide to the right, and you see the adjacent station for like a second or two, and then it slides back to the right, to the right thing you're after. That's pretty strange how that slides back and forth, and you're still on the same frequency, say. Over.
Well, I think what you're seeing there, Mike, is propagation. Propagation with adjacent channels that operate on the same channel that you are normally watching at. And they, from time to time, can overpower the signal of your normal station that you're looking at, or cause interference to the left and the right, as you say. That's just the state of the state. It's the way life is. When the ducting starts to happen, it happens, Mike. Over.
Now you see, Lyman, why we need young people like you to come along and hear these things that are unusual, and you can fix them. I can't even imagine from day one, whenever we started, well, radio, and it started television, and they went into digital, all of the problems they had to surmount to make everything work right. And there's going to be things in the future that are more magnificent. Comments are made, and then all you got to do is hold a cell phone up in the air and say to people, look at this marvel that I've got here. I don't even know where this came from. I never thought of it like a cell phone. Who ever thought you'd be carrying a little tiny thing on your hip and you'd be taking pictures and you'd have your internet on there, you know, with one of these telephones that do all this stuff? It's amazing what you can have on your hip. But just think what Lyman's going to see and what he's going to hear. It will be amazing. Any other comments out there before we're coming up on the top of the hour? We're soon going to shut down the recordings. Does anyone else have anything about the questions tonight? Or any questions at all about the classes, please go ahead now.
KC2RMO, just a quick comment here. It's funny you're talking about this. I did my last show in 1991, and I still have post-broadcast traumatic syndrome about dead air. I still have, and Steph will tell you this too, maybe once a month I have a dream about the station going down or throwing dead air. You know, it'll never leave me ever. Back to you. It's KC2RMO.
Yes, I think I'd be a sweat if I was a technician at a radio or television station and a thing went awry and you go into that instant freeze. The only way I guess to beat that is like with Gordon, having experience and knowing what to do without even thinking hardly. Just pop and do it. Over.
I think it's still haunting no matter what. You can't get away from it. It's just it's a part of you. It'll never ever leave you. But I guess that's what makes it all fun too. Back to you.
Well, you're reminding me of things that I've seen happen on the flight deck of an aircraft carrier that was the joke for a while, but then as the years go by, it never goes away. You always remember the unusual things that happened on the flight deck, and only a few of us insiders saw what was happening and kept it quiet so nobody would make an issue. Okay, now when we come back on Tuesday, we're going to be doing the Tech 7, the T7 section. And then again, we will be entertaining you, let's put it that way. Is there anything that pertains to tonight that I need to mention to anybody before I see N4UJL just popped up? James, do you have a question? I see you pop to the top. Over.
VH.
Go right ahead.
Thank you, Mike. Steve, KF5VH from Lafayette, Louisiana. The comment about things that Lyman will see in his life that we won't see and maybe he can't imagine. There was actually a study done of engineers, and it was found that a lot of engineers go out to design things that were part of the science fiction of their youth. I mean, why were phones made to flip close, the original flip phones? There's a strong belief that they were made to flip close because Captain Kirk's communicators flip close. So, I suppose badges are next for communication. Back to you, Mike, KF5VH.
Yes, this is a little button for Lyman. There's an author I like to read. He was at Caltech along with Richard Lyman, along with Mann, and with other great physicists. And he was a physicist, but he wasn't sure if this is what he was to do. He was a PhD as a physicist. And what he went on to do, wrote Star Trek. He was the technical writer for Star Trek because he was a physicist. And all of those things we saw in the early Star Treks and the later ones coming along, they were actually PhDs who were better at writing technical than actually doing the physics work itself. And what a gift they have been to all of us, that they had the ability to life, to write and envision all of that electronics it was just a dream. Okay, we're at the top of the hour, 2 minutes after. I believe Gordon wants to shut down, so I would like to ask everyone if we can be quiet for a few seconds and let Gordon shut down his 5 recorders, and I will shut down mine as well. This is KD0CDQ, standing by.
Thank you, Mike. Good comments, Steve. About 30 seconds, I'll be right back with you, Mike, KY6V.